Thou, that was the one question I wanted to ask you.
Oh, what was that?
Why don't you ask it?
It's too late. It's too late.
No, I'm sure you could ask it.
No,
it's
too late.
It's too late.
Because you did that promotion where it's like, hey, my book is free today. How did that work? Like,
it works well if you have more than one book.
Yeah, I would imagine you're not going to do it without other books.
I did try because for a while, and Amazon has changed their algorithm, but for a while, it would bump you to the top of the list. Like the first free promotion, and it's diminishing returns. The first free promotion I ever did, I got 10,000 downloads.
Holy shit.
And my sales jumped after that for about 2 months.
So you did hit the 10K.
I did, yeah. I did.
High five.
Free.
Yeah, that was okay. People love free.
Well, and then, you know, other people will mess with that, and they're like, yeah, over 10,000 downloads.
But did you see, like, an increase in Skyfire at all?
This was before I had Skyfire out. I was just pushing. Okay. Yeah, I was just pushing. I didn't really know. I was just desperately trying to sell books, because it was dead in the water. I mean, it was like...
Because no one knew who you were.
Nobody knew who I was. It wasn't in any lists. It doesn't pop... You know, it's not paranormal romance.
They're like, never heard of her before.
It's not a hot genre, you know?
Little fish in a giant sea.
Exactly.
The ocean swallowed you. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. Basically, yeah. It's like, Well, like it says, there's a lot of white noise, and so the free promotion will boost you for a little while. Even if you don't have to have books in a series, but it's best if you have more than one book. So if people read your book and they're like, oh my God, I need everything else by this author. Now when I do a free promotion, even if I only get 2,000 or 3,000 downloads, the sales for Skyfire jump.
So what we need is for him
and anthologies. Like if you'll read an anthology and you'll see, well, there's this author in the anthology and I really like these authors, so I'm gonna look for other things. Like I found 5 authors just from anthologies alone.
So if you want to do free books, do it after you write your second.
Do it, yeah. Or
that'll work, I promise you.
Or do short stories and anthology. Get your work out there.
But the time you did it the second time, like a few months ago, that was Skyfire out.
That was really good,
right?
I had Skyfire out, and it actually, I think that, and then the Ursa Major happened, which was awesome. And I was like I didn't know you could look at the actual numbers. I looked at the actual numbers, and I was like neck and neck with Mary Loud's. Yeah, I was like, wow, that's awesome.
I don't care if I win. That is cool enough.
Did you put yourself mentioned on the Coyote Award thing?
So, welcome back, Fangs and Fonts.
Here.
Part 2. Since we're already talking about Mary Loud, and let's talk more about YA. Good old young adult.
A genre that you don't see a lot in the fandom.
Despite the fact that we've got a fair number of young adults coming in these days.
So since it's probably now been a week or more since I put out the last one, we're back in Montana still, talking to Jessie Owen, writer of Summer King and Skyfire.
Hi.
She's getting us drunk on wine.
We are not the... You're
I'm
Montana
drinking
now.
Cherry Coke.
I'm a lush Tigrox.
The Tigrox.
And now there's a dragon on the table with the griffin.
It's insanity.
It's a party. It's
2 bottles of wine and a dragon and a griffin later. This sounds like the best joke ever.
Out of everything you could write, you wrote young adult. Why?
Because it's what I read and it's what I grew up on, and I really like kids. I wanted to write books for the younger me, and I honestly don't think I could write adult material if I tried. And I don't mean erotica and stuff. I think, you know, anybody can write a genre if they practice enough. I'm not saying anybody can write erotica, because I don't think that's true either. You know, it's nothing's super easy. But when I read an adult fantasy novel like Robert Jordan, George R. R. Martin. Even ones that aren't that dark, I'm just like, I don't feel like I have that.
There's no warm fuzzies.
There's no warm fuzzies. And I was about to use the word sophistication, but that's not right, because YA is incredibly sophisticated in its own way, but there's just something to it that...
Different nuances that are required to be there.
There's different nuances, different levels, and I like the idea of being the book that gets somebody to read. I had a really nice experience this spring where I went and I did a little book fair fundraiser thing at a local Christian school of all places, but they invited me and I said sure, because any opportunity to sell my book and I'm there. Mm-hmm. And the woman there was really intrigued by the books and the premise, and she's like, my son reads, you know, he hasn't read anything in a long, long time. It's just really hard. And that happens with teenage males, usually teenage males. They stop reading kids' books and they move on to adult books, or they don't move on at all. By the time they're 15, they're reading adult fantasy. That's why
not reading.
That's why most YA books are geared toward girls, because those are the ones who are still reading the kind of wish fulfillment fiction or whatever it is. But her son was 13 and had stopped reading, and I said, well, what is he like? She's like, oh, what's it called? And I said, Percy Jackson, and she said, yeah, that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the first boy book that came to mind, and I said, well, I think he might like this, and she bought it, and he didn't put it down, and he loved it, and she got this, and so I'm like, he liked reading my book, and he doesn't like reading anymore. So, you know, just like every writer's dream, and yeah. I always told, you know, you have to figure out how you're going to feel successful as an author, and I told myself, if the book was meaningful to one person, I would be successful. So I consider myself successful, and, you know, maybe the movie deal will come later, but, so yeah, young adult, because,
kids are awesome.
Kids are awesome, and on one of my theater tours, the actress who, this was a Montana tour, and we'd go to school and present a show at school, and there was a writing workshop, and the actress finally told me, she's like, I don't like kids, and I don't like to teach the workshops. And I was like, I'll do it. So I started teaching these writing workshops, and I loved it, because you'd get, you know, I don't think I could be a teacher, because it's the hardest job.
It's so
and the most underappreciated and underpaid and all that, but we won't get into that. But I love teaching workshops, because you're like the cool novelty person coming in. And they'd get letters. I think they had to write the letters, but they would still get some heartfelt letters that were like, I remembered that writing could be fun. And so if you can inspire somebody at a young age, you know, or you can, because I grew up, I mean, my summer vacation was I'd go to the library and get a pile of books 4 feet high. And like, that was my summer vacation, because it was 95 degrees in Texas.
I actually was one of those kids. I remember I had a teacher that really liked the stories I would write. Basically, these days it would be called urban fantasy, but I wrote a lot of urban fantasy as a kid, and I got sent to a lot of writing meets and public speaking things, and then I switched schools and stopped talking to that teacher, obviously completely fell out of it until, you know, these days, but I do remember writing as a kid, and I loved it, and I didn't want to go anywhere with it, but just write, because there were the voices in my head that had to be put on paper, and it made everybody happy.
I found that just write thing is powerful. I found some old journals. There's some documentary on Netflix right now about people who get up on stage and read their teenage journal.
Oh, yeah.
I think we've attempted to do that.
It's fantastic. It's awesome. Oh, so, of course, I pulled out. I journaled prolifically until I was about 17. And pretty much every entry is about writing and how my writing's going. It's like, I sat down and I wrote scenes, and it wasn't... I had no goal for it. They were just, it's like you said, they're the voices in your head, and you just had to...
I'm jealous, because I pulled out my journal that I did until I was about 17, and I was like, why did my mother not smother me in my sleep with a pillow? I was a horrible fucking kid.
Childhood writing experiences.
I lucked out and got to meet I got to meet Robert Munsch, which was, amazing.
He used to do some tours.
Oh, yeah, he was our tour in elementary, and it was amazing, and... There was one other artist, another writer I got to meet as a kid back when, you know, I had Miss Tibbett really pushing me for writing. It was another male writer, and for the life of me, the guy who wrote Wayside Stories. Wayside School.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah. It even got turned into a cartoon, too. But
I want to say, like, Louis something.
I don't remember, but that we got to meet that author, too, when we were a kid, so.
You're spelling mistake. I got...
What?
Curfew.
My dad read to, my dad read to us, mom read to us,
blame
but dad is the big reader in the family, and he read to us every single night. You know, when you're a kid, you read the same book over and over.
Oh yeah,
I loved
it. Curl in bed.
And then my favorite book was Little Mouse on the Prairie. It's adorable.
Ours was Treasure Island. We read that one a couple times.
And then in third grade, our teacher would read to us for about a half hour after lunch. And she read these books called Hank the Cowdog, which are a big deal. Big deal in Texas. But when I got my library card, I got Hank the Cowdog books because I was hooked. She got me so intrigued, and I loved the way she did it. And I just tore through these books. And so the first author that I got to meet was John Erickson, the author of Hank the Cowdog, and I had all these drawings I'd done for him. And in my head, I think I was like 9. I had all these things I wanted to say, and I got up there, and I was
kind of
absolutely terrified. No, I couldn't say anything. I was freaking out, and I just kind of shoved the drawings at him. And Mom's like, Jessica, and I ran away.
Aww.
I was just so, and he was probably like, wow, this is, you know, but
weird.
So that was my first. I don't know. I hope he was just kind of like, oh, poor kid, you know. Just starstruck.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong with that? Shit.
But, you know, so somewhere in my collection, I have one signed John Erickson book. So that was the first one. And then from there, The White Panther, the book that if anybody can find a copy of that book.
Oh, right. That's the one we were talking about today.
Yeah, I love that.
Well,
so
it's like me and trying to find Claire Bell's stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So that's my quest. And then I can't remember the name of the other one that's about the lion. And somehow, I can't remember the transition from White Panther to fantasy, but somehow I found Tamara Pierce and I became a fantasy. That was it.
White Panther.
Fantasy person.
By Theodore
As
J.
a kid,
Walden.
my entrance was Dragonlance books.
Oh.
And then I tried to go back, and it was like, and I actually I tried to pick them up and was like, eh. So now
exactly.
I'm.
No, I just looked up the White Panther, and it's just new and used, one from $289.
That's what I said. If anybody can find, yeah.
My oh my.
Anyway.
But yeah, where it's, I went back and I was like, when I was older, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try to read Dragonlance again. I'm like, oh, I can't handle this right now. I can't handle Tasselhoff. And now.
I just can't handle it.
Now I want to get it again. Like, I've got the first book. I bought the EPUB for it. And I'm like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to read the trilogy. I'm going to go at it. Like, not for nostalgia purposes, but as like to actually read it, and then go through it as a writer, because there are certain things in there that were done very well. Mostly the fact that it was their D&D campaign that they transcribed into an actual book.
I think I latched onto another fantasy series like that was. Again, like we were saying, when you become a teenager, either you move up to, now there's YA and new adult and
move
all these
up,
things that
out.
Kind of, yeah, you move up or you stop yeah. reading.
Well, my brother was
yeah.
starting high school. He was reading Wheel of Time.
Mm.
And it was, and the way he did it was, and I nothing but balls for this dude, he would read the book and he'd read along the series until the new one. He'd read that one, and then as he was waiting for the next one in the series, would go back and reread the series.
I did that with Lisa Norman's series, because she would release a book, and then release a book, and I think she's at like 8 right now, and every time she releases a new book, I go back and reread the entire series to reread the new
book.
But
with Wheel of Time, you're talking about books that are over 1,000 pages.
Yeah, well, I didn't say it was exactly, so I said I do like that. Because it helps you get back in the proper frame of mind for the story again.
Which is true.
I know we already talked about community, but for people who want to do a Kickstarter campaign, it's a good PR thing, but you also want to kind of have a community in place beforehand. So something like
some
you guys, what's that?
Instead of just being some beggar?
Well, somebody who doesn't, if you've never heard of somebody or they don't have any support, it's sort of like, okay, why am I supporting this, or who are they, or how serious are they, or... So YA? We talked...
Back to that conversation.
Well,
yeah.
Sorry. You're turning into a Tigrox.
Shit, you're
no,
your
I'm a No, I'm a stage manager.
Earning your stripes.
We were talking earlier about YA and the fandom, and I wanted to say I think it's important, because especially furry, because if that's, you know, as somebody, as a teen... is feeling outcast or not feeling outcast, but they find a community and they find a form of expression in the furry fandom, whether it's art or writing or costuming or just like-minded people.
Yeah.
It's really important for them to have as many expressions of that as possible. You know, fantasy nerds have it, sci-fi, Star Trek, but if it goes from, you know, Disney animals to erotica. Mm-hmm. Not that teens can't read erotica, because you know they know about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's cool to have at least a bridge, or for somebody who, if that's not what the fandom is about for them, because a lot of YA stories are rich enough that anybody can enjoy them.
Well, one of the things we were talking about earlier on the hike is the fact that with young adult versus, say, standard fiction, especially in the fandom, is with young adult, you're not dealing necessarily with all the heavy topics that you're having in erotica or just a normal adult fiction, especially in the furry fandom. Because unfortunately, a lot of the adult fiction also has a lot of erotica in it, because...
Mm-hmm. Or really stereotype scenarios.
And it's just... And sometimes it is nice to pick up a book that... And I mean, I've started reading YA just because, for example, The School of Good and Evil, where it's just like, I want to pick something that's light. It's still dealing with relevant subjects, but at the same point, it's not this uber-heavy, moralistic...
It's a little bit fluffy.
It is a little bit fluffy. Like, I'm not gonna call it fluffy fiction or popcorn fiction.
No, it's definitely not fluffy fiction, but it is softer.
It's a nice mental break.
Is it so fluffy you could die?
Yes.
Well, like, as I was... Sorry, when we were talking earlier, like, I was talking about how in reading The School of Good and Evil, there's one scene where someone dies, and the way that it happens, I'm like, the freaking heck just happened here? This is a YA book, huh? What's going to change everything? And then it was like, okay, wait. And then I look at it from how the story's going and the characters, and I was like, that was beautifully done. Because it automatically shows how the characters are working and how they're twisting through everything and whatnot, especially because it involves the boys.
Yeah. Did you have a moment where it's like, they died? This is a kid's book!
No.
Well, and the thing is, if you really start to break it down, you know, there's young readers, there's middle grade, there's YA, there's upper YA and lower YA, and you don't, you know, the big thing is you don't ever write down to them, but there are certain concepts that kids are ready for and certain ones that they aren't, you know, or certain language that they use. I mean, there's death from, you know, Old Yeller. I mean, there's there's death in middle grade because kids are
Look at Watership Down. That's young adult, and that's...
Exactly. There's kids in real life are dealing with death, and teenagers are dealing with heavy, heavy things. And I'm reading a great book about writing kidlit by an agent, and she talks about the various stages that they're going through, and then I have this character traits book that talks about what you're experiencing in different parts of your life. And so it's not just it's YA, so it's not as heavy as adult fiction. There's certain things that these readers are going through that they want to experience in the fiction, so they can see how other people handle it, or they can exorcise it from, you know, it's cathartic, and they're like, oh, okay, or they haven't experienced it yet, like love, or, you know, there's sex in YA, or death, maybe they haven't, you know, I had an idyllic childhood, you know, everybody has stuff, family stuff that they deal with, but, you know, if I read a darker book, I was like, these are things that I need to know, and I need to be prepared for, and you can get that through fiction.
Secondhand experience.
What's the John Fault in Our Stars? I mean, that's YA.
Yeah.
And that's not...
No, it's being showed in high schools now.
Yeah. So, and Number the Stars.
Isn't To Kill a Mockingbird classified as young adult?
Yeah. And that...
The thing is, though, is there's young adult that's written for that, and then there's books that have become classics.
Classified yeah.
And adult. Then because... Well, they're not classified. They're just classics. And because they're classics, it's... Oh, we should do these in school.
But, okay, so
and then they're limited to when you're in school.
Huckleberry Finn is a big American tale, but that contains the N-word, right?
Yeah, that's why it gets banned, or Mockingbird, same thing.
Yeah, even though they're important set pieces for the time.
Diary of Anne Frank. There's a whole
Diary of Anne Frank.
There's a whole page where she is talking about her blooming sexuality, and she talks about her
and
womanhood.
So everyone's
and her
like,
feelings
no,
for
no,
this
sex
other
verboten.
Girl. Well, they
verboten.
Pull it, they pull it from Catholic schools because it's like, well, we don't need Catholic them to be thinking about this, or, you know, it's just.
But public slash non-Catholic schools, I'm hoping, are still keeping that in?
Not necessarily. That page is left out a lot. And you can, if you Google...
missing page.
Like, I know some
missing page from
Anne
Frank or censored page from Anne Frank. You'll read it and you'll go, okay, maybe not for a 12-year-old.
Do I want my 12-year-old reading this?
You know, or...
Well, it was like when we were in junior high and it was like, here's the Epic of Gilgamesh. And it's just like, why are you giving this to us? And then, like, it's like, can you do a book report on it? It's like,
I don't understand. I know when the twins were younger, you know, 12-ish, it was a case of we wanted to be open with them because, you know, life isn't a freaking sugar walk, but how open will we be with them? And, you know, I think they got the better end of the deal because eventually we just started saying, I can tell you, but I can't untell you. So at that point, we were giving them the responsibility of, do you really want to know
this point?
And I think it served them really well because even now at 17, they're like, what are you talking about? It's like, we could tell you, but we can't untell you. Don't care anymore. Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
It's the same age they're going through sex ed.
Exactly. It's 12. But I mean, do you want sex ed from, you know, like a really old... kind of singular archaic version, or do you want the clinic version? You know, like, what can you go home and talk to your parents about? I'm assuming that most kids went home and talked to the parents. I was one of them that did, but
I can understand, because from sex ed, you know, they send the forms, we're going to teach your kids about sex, are you okay? They don't want to do the same thing, like, we're going to read this book. And I've seen that, actually.
Like,
there are times where it's like, we're going to read this book in school. Are you okay with that?
If not,
we'll put little Timmy in the other class for a few years.
Yeah, here's the alternate reading.
Well, because I think we did that with Kill a Mockingbird, and, you know, your child, you have the option to do this or not, and my mom's like, do you want to read it? And I'm like, it's a book, of course I want to read it.
I think it's weird, because there's a responsibility, air quotes, with YA, but also not, because you don't want to censor yourself. If there's something that you feel is important for a teen audience to know, there's an author, I think he's in England, who was writing a book for kids, and it was very dark, and it didn't have an optimistic ending, and there was death, and there was things, and people were like, we can't publish this unless you have some hope in it. And he's like, well, some children live in a hopeless world.
Yeah.
Let's not lie to them. And it's like, well, that's true, but...
we still want this happy.
Do we want... it's like, why do we want to give them that at this age? It's a delicate balance between...
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you guys, I'm pretty... happy, bubbly, optimist kind of person, so I wouldn't be able to write a hopeless ending if I tried.
Oh, have you met Darl? Next time we'll bring Roland down and you can just meet the stories that
they
just...
hopeless.
I think you
see,
can...
I get to the end and I'm like, okay, it's done.
Because I really had to work at that one story to make it hopeless. Like, she could have lived. Nope, I had to kill her.
Well, and there's... you can only write... if it's true to the story and it's true to the characters, then you have to write it. You know, there's the big... there's the controversy over a certain, YA dystopian book and how it ended, and the fans were outraged and all that. And I won't say it in case people haven't finished it, but I'm not that writer. You know, it's gotta have some hope. It's gotta have some, you know, the human griffin, whatever spirit can pull through this. Horrible things are gonna happen, but especially because young people are reading the book, it's like they're reading it to learn about these things that are going to happen, or deal with the bullies, or fight the dragon. And it's like, can you do it? Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. You might not be the same.
It's not necessarily like an escapism that we as adults read. It's kind of, well, it's a learning experience. It's escapism with a lesson behind it.
Well, it is. And even if you don't set out to teach the lesson, they're still absorbing it. In fact, I think if you set out to teach a lesson, you're setting yourself up for a really bad book.
Because they're not going to get it at that point.
Well, it's not that they're not going to get it, but they'll smell it from a mile away.
Wait.
If there's a book, it's like, wait
Aesop
a minute.
When I was growing up reading all those Conan books, you mean that's not how the world really is?
Conan young adult.
There is Conan young adult.
Well, even, you know, if you look at Harry Potter, which is, you know, the big
one right now.
The big one for a long time, I think it's the book that made fantasy popular again, and that really made YA popular, even though it started as middle grade, and then she's like, well, that's an example writing what you're called to write, and she didn't write down ever. And kids read up. They're like, we love these books, we're gonna read up to this level, we're gonna
do what
we have to do. There's tons of lessons, you know, air quotes. I do that a lot.
Swish, swish.
There's tons of lessons in that book that kids can accept or not about friendship and honor and courage and the best magic. Yeah, it's kindness and things like that are the most powerful forces in the world. Love is the most powerful force in the world. Is the core of those books.
Well, the thing that surprised me, and it was, you get a sense of it in the novel, but the movie really hit it, where it was like the one scene where Ron goes through the insane jealousy of there's Harry and Hermione, mm-hmm. and they're like naked.
Yeah, that scene.
What? And it's just like
you haven't seen the final.
It's in the movie, and it's just like, and that scene played, and I was like, "Holy crap!" But but you think to the kids who are reading it, here is a point where the girl he's been crushing over for the entirety of these books is his worst fear is that she's going to hook up with his best friend, and then that's presented to him as a kid.
Spoilers.
Yeah, as a kid. You're gonna
haven't read it by now,
especially as a young boy, having something like that. That you know, even though it might be your trivial junior high, elementary, whatever, love interest, you still look at how they deal with that jealousy and that rage, and especially at a time when your hormonal is all hell, it gives you a way to work through it. Maybe not slaying the evil magic with the sword, but yeah.
Well, and that's something else that if you're gonna write, why I'm learning.
You've already figured out our hand signals.
Gonna,
I love it.
If you're gonna write YA, is to remember, you know, go back to that time in your life when everything was so big and it was so important and you knew everything and you were so smart. It's like, that's why if you have journals, keep them, because you'll read it and go, God.
Like, I guess you didn't have that glaze of cynicism over how your emotions reacted to the stimuli of your external world.
Exactly. Everything was important. Everything was real. You know, this love is real. It's going to last forever. Oh, I hate this person. I hate my person.
Discussing with teenagers today, when you hear their problems, you're like, oh, you sound like me 10 years ago, and wait, I want to slap me from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Trust me on this one. Just shut up and go.
It's easy to dismiss that and be like, oh, you'll grow out of it. Yeah. But if you go back to that and remember...
It was the most important thing in your life.
It was the most important thing, and it was genuine. You know, they're not they're not being drama queens. They're figuring out... They're literally figuring out their emotions. Yeah. Figuring out abstract thought at this point. And so it's all so powerful. If you can figure out a book that speaks to them, that's why Twilight... was so powerful. And whether or not you like them, I read them because you read a multi-million-dollar franchise, you know.
There's got to be something to it.
It spoke to teenage girls because it dealt with, I'm feeling these powerful emotions, what do I do with them?
And I've read most of the first book, and actually was given it a
you
gift.
You have promised
later
to read it so we could talk with my sister.
Anyway, but the thing is as I was reading it, especially the first part with Bella, and it was like, people will trash Twilight for the vampires, but whatever. She came up with an original thing for vampires.
Okay, if your book is big enough to be trashed, you've done something right.
But not even that. It's just, she came up with something original for vampires. Mm-hmm. Original for one of the oldest monsters in the world.
Said the monster writer.
Like, itself is epic. I don't care. Yeah, okay, they sparkle. Whoop-dee-friggin-doo. Yes, it's a love story. Whoop-dee-friggin-doo. It's still unique.
And
it's huge.
Anyway,
she made it YA.
And she made it YA. Yeah.
And it's huge.
But the thing is when I first started reading through it, I'm reading Bella and she's talking and I'm going, this is exactly how I figure a young teenage girl is reacting to the world around them just from my own observations as a boy growing up. And I was like, this is why this book is so popular. And it's just because her internal monologue and how she's depressed and she's, oh, everything sucks, and I hate this, and it's just...
Like a teenage girl.
Like a teenage girl, yeah.
But they're all missing you, flailing and moving up.
Oh, yeah, he's doing, like, the Frenchman thing with the arms going everywhere, and it's awesome.
Anyway.
No,
sweetie, that's a monkey.
No, that's Holy Grail. I don't remember if you've seen it or not.
Sorry.
If people in the furry fandom specifically want to do something that's untapped and invite a powerful, powerful audience, you know, look into YA because it's really fun, you know, and you're going to hit people at a crucial time in their lives, specifically people who are looking for their identity. And if they found this fandom and they're like, oh, I feel like I'm at home and I can express myself, and they're looking for other ways, it's like, here are the books for me, you know? And it doesn't have to be like, oh, this is a normal teenage story, but just something that they can relate to.
So when you wrote your Summer King, were you like trying to focus on like what was like 17-year-old me thinking? Or were you just like, this is a good book that I think would target that audience?
I wanted to keep it friendly enough for that a well-read 11-year-old could read it. Okay. But it's, you know,
I judge your justice.
His, you know, Shard's age equivalent is like 17. Oh, 17, well, 18. Right, so it's Brofist.
He just brofisted the griffin.
It's a talon bump.
The griffin
brofisted
me. Thank you.
Bropaw.
You jealous of this relationship?
It's a YA, but the experience or the emotion or whatever you want to call it is the coming of age. You know, finding out who you are, why you're important, what your special skills are, how you fit into the world, and you know that can speak to anybody at any level, but specifically.
But that's exactly what you're doing at that age. Yeah. It's like, who am I?
Yeah, and particularly in middle grade, it's like, what is my special skill? Because they don't have all the abstract thoughts yet. You know, teenagers is more like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Who am I going to love? You know, what am I good at? And then middle grade
will
is
people
like
me?
fitting in, you know, and things like that. So,
well, and that's just to go back to your initial point about an untapped market. That's one of the things that you're seeing now within the furry fandom is you're seeing a lot of younger people, like really young people coming
like
in, where it was like suddenly there you have people who are between like 12 years old.
Their parents are logging onto the forums to seeing what is my kid logging on to and signing up for.
Like with Pink, I mean, the first convention she attended, her parents dropped her off and picked her up after a couple hours. The second event she attended, her parents booked a hotel room with her in the convention and stayed the entirety of the con.
Well, AC, there's parents walking kids around.
Her parents helped me move a couch last week.
But anyway, so you have these young kids coming into the fandom, and unfortunately, the way that the stereotypical view of furries, unfortunately, has a lot to do with how we present ourselves. And if you look at our fiction, a lot of it is, and in the artwork especially, there is a lot of erotica that is just there. And you know what? Yeah, great. You've got your binders full of artwork where you've got your little, like,
stickers.
Over the little...
Silent Inner stickers.
Over the,
she's not the only one.
No, all of them do.
Wherever
it's the nipples and the private parts. Great for you. That's not enough. But the fact is that you... But when it comes to the fiction for the readers, because the fact of the matter is a lot of the people coming into the fandom are going to be the same people that have been in it constantly. The people who are looking for acceptance... They're people who maybe are socially awkward and don't necessarily have the full social skills. And the fact is there's really nothing literary for them to take away from it because everything is adult fiction. And as we said earlier, not necessarily erotic, but everything is
adult-oriented.
Say she went through for Planet, and so at the next con... They've got Summer King, and then right behind it is Will of the Alpha.
Yeah.
How do you feel with those two specific books? Very incredibly different books. Even the artwork alone on both of them will tell you these are completely different books.
I would
books.
Have hope they'd separate.
It's tricky.
But
well,
how
that's
do you even
why they
separate
have,
that
that's
on the
why
table,
they have,
really?
Well, a
this
table
much
is
table,
tricky,
right?
And, you know, a bookstore, you know, that's why a bookstore is like, okay, I've got this shelf for this, and this shelf for this, and kids section is roped off. In the North Carolina town where I was, the kids section was like, there was like glass, like they could not get to. They had to go the way around to get into the adult or the teenage books.
Well, like
you know?
When Bad Dragon does a con, they're like, how old are you? Okay, now you can look in the special binder zip up thing.
And,
yeah,
know,
and unzip.
Yeah.
You feel the thing that everyone's felt.
Anyway.
But because. Sorry, I'll let you finish.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, one, it's an untapped market for anybody who's, you know, who wants to do that or fill the niche, you know.
Because Mary Wilde's
book
last is still
one,
on that for
Planet Table. Exactly, it's rake, yeah, it's, basically, if they're 15, you know, 14, 15 and up, and they can read, then they'll, you know, young, it's young adult. If a young adult reads it, it's young adult. But as far as a, somebody said young adult's not a genre, it's a mindset, and it's not a genre. It's a there's a specific word for it, but it's a classification of who will read this book, where do we put it in the bookshelf.
It's like a marketing.
It's a marketing thing. It's so that you can say, all right, who are we selling this to? But for the fandom, it would be a nice welcome in so that kids don't feel like they have to grow up to be in the fandom. It's like, oh, no, I can like this.
I can fantasy stuff.
Considering that a lot of the things marketed towards them, like Disney and DreamWorks, like movies and that are really just, you know, animal-based character movies, it's not that far a stretch.
Well, it's not. And then, you know, we talked about this on the hike, how that, oh, that goes away when you grow up. It's like, oh, well, that's animal stories. That's kid stuff.
It's
but
kid stuff,
well,
yeah.
Adults love them, you know.
I've got a coworker who, she will not watch cartoons because cartoons are for kids. And I said, okay, watch the show Archer and tell me it's for kids.
Yeah.
Well, then I have a friend who...
No.
My aunt wouldn't let her, my cousins watch The Yellow People.
I wasn't allowed to watch Simpsons either growing up.
We were allowed Simpsons, not South Park.
Oh,
South,
no,
well, South Park isn't really...
South
I,
Park is
I
a
have,
little more vulgar.
I have a friend. I wouldn't let a kid watch South Park.
I wouldn't let my 17-year-old sisters watch South Park. You're like, what the hell are you watching? Turn that off.
It is too far. Yeah, Shard is too new. Shard is pure. But no, and it's... I don't know why people overlook it. Because one, it's a really fun genre to write because... You can focus on certain things and it can be very dramatic and they'll go with you on it because that's how they're feeling. They're like, yes, this is really important that guy won't go out with you or that you were spurned or that you didn't get first place. Those are really important things. You know, in Harry Potter, the Quidditch matches were everything. You know, they were an important part of the book and the world.
And points for the end of the year was like the be-all, end-all.
Yeah,
goal.
The Griffin. That's how she ended the...
Because
every book was
a year
house
at
cup,
school.
The house
you
cup,
know?
Yeah.
And
house cup that year.
That's one reason the books were so popular is because we like school stories and we like fantasy. And so let's...
Is it such that we're at adults, we're like, well, that's just silly school stuff. Why would I care? And so we take ourselves out of that mindset and then don't even think about writing
it. That's because we grew up.
And then if you're reading it and you engage with the characters... You care about what they care about. And so if you can get that teenage audience and the kids' audience, because the kids have tremendous buying power because their parents are buying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
These are not college kids with no money. You know, these are kids with parents who are like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, imagine if you went to a fur con and there's parents with kids and there's a kid's book or a young adult and they'd buy that.
If they ignore all the...
If they ignore all the other stuff, or if there's a section, or if there's a significant...
If they don't put the blinders on a child and walk them straight past the table.
Exactly. If there's a significant offering of, these are what we're giving to the new fans, the next generation, you know? And you don't... It's tricky, but it's not as tricky as it seems. You just... It's like when I mentioned earlier I was going to have Shard eat the fermented berries, and I'm like, wait, that's not what I want. That's for an adult novel. And I had to pull that, and it's not the same as writing down. It's, okay, if my 12-year-old neighbor reads this, do I want his hero character to deal with his fear by...
Yeah.
Substance abuse.
No, I don't. And there are books that deal with that, but they're not my books. And, you know, generally in YA it's portrayed negatively. So.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's one reason I like writing or reading YA is because as a horror writer... I expect the worst when I'm reading a book. So when... Here's a perfect example. Really young YA. Ponyo, the movie.
Oh.
the movie with no antagonist. The thing is, though, is I sat through that entire movie going, where's the antagonist? Where's the antagonist?
That's what,
threw
me off. Yeah.
But it's because we're trained
to
sit there and enjoy the journey of the character... through this experience with Ponyo, we're trained that there has to be someone who's going to conflict with him and
throw
him
something.
Because
really, they're just watching their kid kind of grow
but
up,
what,
right?
But
my
what
neighbor
does...
Totoro is
so,
the same
turn?
Well,
I
like,
loved that one.
Well, if you want an antagonist, it could be the sickness with their mother. But
conflict.
They want
you don't need
to
an antagonist, you need a conflict.
In Ponyo, they say...
I will point out that I watched Taken right before watching Ponyo, So you're going from Liam Neeson, and then when you watch Ponyo, the first thing that's said is Liam Neeson going, "Have you seen my daughter?" Which is just hilarious.
They do mention in Ponyo that if she doesn't do, if something doesn't happen, mm-hmm. she'll die. But there is no force behind it. It's like, you're like,
it's a fact.
It's not going to happen.
It's not a threat. It's a fact.
Well, no. It's not even that. It's, you know, it's not going to happen because it is a kid's movie. And they're going to be fine. And the entire movie, it's just a journey. There's no real threats to them. Nothing really bad happens. But we as adults, what does it say that we're sitting there going, something bad's going to happen? Yeah.
Why hasn't something bad happened?
Why haven't they died?
It's what you expect from the genre. You know, I remember, I can't remember which book on writing I've been reading, but there was a thing, you know, there's a scene in Twilight where there's this big buildup and she sees this woman, and it's obviously a vampire, and then the chapter opening is like, oh, it's a friend, and you know, she runs and hugs her, but it's a little bit of suspense, it's a little bit of micro tension that makes you turn the page. And in YA, it's acceptable to have the threat of something bad, but then it's okay,
it's just not gonna be something
and it's
bad.
Yeah, and it's sort of along the same lines as romance, and there are some, or sex or whatever, in Twilight, and one of the reasons they were successful is that they were for a teenager who has not had experience yet, or had an experience and it wasn't what they thought it would be or whatever. The books are romantic and they're sensual and they're titillating, but they don't go there. It's sort of like the best horror. They leave it to your imagination. And she never actually writes, I guess the movies, I never watched the movies, I guess they had a pretty, not graphic, but enough of a sex scene that you were like, oh, okay, that's what happened. But in the book, she never writes that. She never writes that scene. It doesn't even go into, there's never heavy making out. There's never heavy petting. It's all just these soft touches.
It's just attraction.
It's attraction, and it's
take my possibility. Vampire baby.
It's possibility.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the thing, the same with violence is, yeah, it's like, oh gosh, this could happen. I have to see okay, it's going to be okay. Or, oh, they figure it out. Anticipation.
That's the word.
And so you can do that, and then the reader can spring forward in their mind and go, okay, how would I handle it? Oh, okay, it's all right. Or, oh, that's how they solved it. You know, and that's a really...
Because anticipation is almost a force stronger than the thing that you're anticipating.
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, yeah,
anticipating something is always bigger than when it actually happens.
Like Christmas. Yeah, and everything. No, but it's, like, even in horror or in sex scenes, I always feel like what the reader can come up with in their mind is better than...
Well, yeah, it's almost better to just provide a loose framework sometimes and let them fill in the gaps themselves, right?
I
talked about this with the movie Monsters, which I finally got a chance to watch.
It was awesome.
It's by the same director who does Godzilla, the new one. And
Trollhunter.
No.
No? Oh.
Anyway, in it... one of the things he says is he's like, because Monsters is a giant monster movie, and he's like, first thing, wham, there's the monsters full on view. He's like, because the movie is not about the monsters. It's not like Cloverfield, where the entire audience is spending the entire movie wanting to see the monster, so they don't give a crap about what's going on. He's like, it's about the people, so... Beginning of the movie, there's your monsters. End of the movie, there's your monsters. You know what the monsters look like. You know what they can do.
You get more peeks throughout.
But here's the people that I want you to care about. It's just like Godzilla. Bang,
so
there's Godzilla. But, the 20-minute tragedy that leads up to it, where you're just sitting there going, oh my God, I'm crying in Godzilla.
Yeah.
And the whole movie hasn't really started yet.
It was really well done. Just with the buildup and the anticipation on it.
Well, and see, and that's a pure craft thing. It's like, what do you want the audience to
focus on,
and how do you want them to react? And you really have to guide. And with YA and middle grade, you know, the big... David Farland has a great article on what different age groups read for and why there's, like, crime and romance and women's lit and all that. And young audiences read for humor, horror, wonder... And wonder. So that's why fantasy is really popular. And there's one more, but I can't remember. Sorry to be mystery, humor, wonder, horror, and mystery. So you can see why Harry Potter. They're
so
funny.
Good.
She's a mystery writer. So there's these great little things built who's throughout doing this? And the who's wonder doing that? I mean, yeah. So if you can build, those are just, you know, really cheap tools that you can build into your work to draw in middle grade and then obviously adult.
We have to write that mystery one. Exactly. Yeah,
the mystery anthology. Uh-huh. But it, you know, if you decide that you want to write YA or middle grade, don't just think of it as, oh, I have to write an adult story without the sex or without the violence. Look at what those, or remember what
those
you
qualities.
Were. Yeah, those qualities, and remember what you wanted as a, you know, you wanted to find out things or you wanted to escape. You know, you wanted
just
to get away
or inquisitive and almost a little bit of innocence still.
Yeah, a little bit of innocence and maybe optimism, at least in my books,
optimism.
A sense of empowerment. You know, it's very important that at some point the parents go away. And that's why there's so many orphans. It's now a cliche. It's a trope. The parents have to go away. Or the adults or whatever it is.
Like, you have to rip the safety blanket away.
Yeah. Right. Lemony Snicket, Harry Potter. You know, the kids either through their own, they're like, no, the adults don't understand, so we have to solve it. You have to give the power to the child protagonist.
You have to
kind of
shove them on the roof.
That's, yeah. Otherwise, the kid's going to be like, oh, well, the teacher solved it. That's stupid.
Or dad
said
I couldn't go out anymore.
for a bit of a bad stereotype, how do you look at, like, the 26-year-old still living in their parents' basement?
They're not solving any mysteries anytime soon.
My favorite books in, like, elementary school I got from my aunt in Ontario. They were called Wild Magic.
Tamara Pierce.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, I read Alana, and then Wild Magic is about this girl who can communicate with animals. She has wild magic, and, the, you know, eventually she can't control it, and then it's all this thing, but, you know, in her books are brilliant YA because the solution lies with her protagonists in some way.
I remember, it just reminded me, when I was a kid, I read a story that was, you know, about the kids' discovery, the self-discovery growing up. But this one they didn't get rid of the parents in. Basically, he goes to a curio shop. He's looking around. He's wasting time. He finds, this looks like a dragon egg.
Jeremy Thatcher, Dragon Hatcher.
Is that what that was? It's been so long, I haven't even thought
well
of it.
Well done.
I own it.
You know, I'm thinking about, like Animorphs, you know, they have this special power.
Oh,
they couldn't tell their parents because anyone could be, like, the guy's brother and his mom.
Well,
but,
yeah, because
so they had to do it on their own.
Was a perfect example because he sneaks the egg in. He sneaks the meat out of the freezer. Mom's
but,
like, well, your appetite's gotten weird. What happened to all this raw meat? Oh, I threw it out. Well, what's wrong with you?
Well, but in the end, you know, the thing of, well, you have to, I'm sorry if I spoiled it, but it came out in the 80s, so, you know.
If you came
90s,
out in the 80s, you probably read it.
He has to make the final journey without his parents. It's kind of,
yeah, he has to let
there can
go.
Be parents, but they have to be part of the conflict. And his conflict was, how am I going to feed this dragon?
Yeah, hence the stealing the meat and the
yeah. So if
and
the parents are there, they have to be a source of conflict, and they can be a source of support. But it's also, it's kind of like Honey I Shrunk the Kids or Madeline Ingalls books. All of them,
yes,
are brilliant for family relations, siblings, parents. But generally, the kids end up on these epic adventures. A Wrinkle in Time,
So
Many
good.
Waters is another favorite of mine. But the kids, something happens, and they end up on their own. It's not that they don't have great relationships with their parents, but something happens. Because if you're writing a kid's novel, the kid has to be
on their own to
the hero.
Because that's part of adolescence, too, is you're rebelling against, you know, your family.
Well,
you
want to
do it on your own.
I don't want you. Who are you to boss me around?
I'm tired
you know?
Of you bossing me around.
Yeah.
I'm tired of you telling
well,
me
that
what
was,
to tired
that
of
I can
what
do
it
so
myself.
I
want to do this.
Your character is becoming the hero. They're making a stand.
Well,
they're
was,
becoming themselves.
They're being responsible.
They know they can do it. They're smart enough. They're strong enough.
So why don't we have more of this in the fandom?
Because a lot of the
I'm hoping that this gets people excited because it really is an exciting genre.
So about that anthology in Char's world.
That is, I you know, I'll say it if I don't give away the title to book 3 because I'm doing that at Rocky Mountain Fur Con, a project that I want to do after the Summer King Chronicles is out and done, and I take a short vacation somewhere, maybe to Canada.
Yeah,
okay. Maybe to Banff. I do want to do.
We have lovely wine up there too.
I want to see. I want to do
Okanagan
an anthology.
Ooh.
Mead.
Oh,
jeez. Yeah.
I want to do an anthology that's. It would be set in my world, kind of like Mercedes Lagge has her Valdemar thing. I would have mine. So
Andre
yes,
Norton
you have to
has
read
her
the
witch's world. I love exactly. her anthology, the anthology.
So it would be a multi-author thing, but set in my world. And there's,
yeah, Andre Norton is wonderful for that. I love it. Here's my world. Do you want to make pieces of it?
Yes, I do. Here you go. Well, because everybody has such wonderful voices, and it's a really neat way for authors to kind of get their names out there,
you've got
but also
this big picture. But now you've got other people making shadows. For
yeah,
us.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and get people into the world, but with a different voice, because you might get sick of, you know,
mm-hmm.
might get sick of.
But yes, we need more YA in the adult. And I mean, it's come up before. The
so
fact that
let's
we
do something.
The fandom just gets younger and younger.
Well, and that, well, and that might help. You know, if some of them come in and they're like, you know, I love the fandom, but erotica's not my thing, or horror's
well,
not my thing.
Especially when we have more and more people who are like, well, reading's not my thing. I don't want to put the investment in it. Why not invest in the younger readers that are going to grow up as
reading.
You're growing more? You've already hooked them at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, so maybe they're not reading yet YA anymore. That doesn't mean that you...
Well, that's... Why do you think that R.A. Salvatore and James Patterson and all these huge authors have now come out with YA books?
Because you snag them now, bring
them
in later.
You snag them now. Yeah, R.A. Salvatore has a book, and it came out years and years and years ago, but it's this young kid on a ship. It's a YA or middle grade. He's on his ship, and who does he meet? Drizzt. You know, so cook it, and then
like,
the kids grow up, and they're like, "Oh, look, there's that character." That
if R.L. Stine wrote an adult like theme novel now, yeah, are you more interested to read it if you read his stuff as a kid?
Superstitions. I actually bought it. I never read his stuff as a kid, but I was like, I want to see what he had, like, because he's written so much horror. As
I'm gonna put that in air quotes, horror,
because
a lot of those stories were not horror.
But there's people.
But when you're a kid, they are.
There are people
as a kid, some of them are just like, okay. I'm now a comic book hero. But
there are people who were genuinely terrified of something that they saw in an R.L. Stine book. And not all of them, but like one or two, like maybe Killer Clowns or whatever.
Yeah.
That
some of them were
the
actually
out
scary.
Them.
I was freaked out by the one at the mirror in the attic. There's like this mirror that they turn on a special light and they go into this mirror world. And then at the end, it turns out that his brother, he's like, wait a minute. You know, they did something. They destroyed the mirror. They fought. And then he's like, wait a minute. There's something about your hair. And it was the brother from the mirror world that he escaped. And
no.
So his real brother is. I was like,
Never,
and my bedroom was in an attic that had a little room with a light. And so in my head, I'm like, it was horrible. That's why I don't read horror.
That was my room.
That
those,
was the moment.
Those,
that was
do
the
you
moment.
Realize now, I'm realizing now that those were like the M. Night Shyamalan before M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Because every book had a twist at the end, right?
They were eerie without being...
Yeah. Like at the end, it's like, oh, your character was a robot.
And that's why I picked up his adult book, because it was like, I am curious to see if he could write
now
adult
I, now horror. I see, like, and since I read his stuff as a kid, now I want to see, like...
But like we were talking on the thing, Clive Barker, possibly creator of the Cenobites.
Now writes YA.
Well, he
or used, did.
He did. He's going back to write other things now, but he wrote YA. And it was just like, just to see if he could. And he got very successful with it because people are like, Clive Barker is writing YA? I have to see this.
Well, and that's the thing. This is kind of a tangent. But if people want to write YA, the important thing is to obviously read some of it before, because it's not just adult fiction with the naughty bits cut out.
Yeah,
there's a whole well it's not, you know.
Well,
and
like
you
said before, there's nuances that need to be
like any genre
is.
You know, I wouldn't try and write a mystery until I'd read and understood the tropes.
And just making
and you
your character 16 doesn't make it
just
YA
making
either.
No, there are young protagonists in fantasy novels that are adult novels. There's in Winter's Tale, there's a whole section of the book where it talks about the kids, you know, the character's childhood, but it's not a child's story, and a kid would throw that book across the room. But the thing, that's what I wanted to say about YA is that if you can hook a YA audience, you're a good writer, because kids will not read a boring book.
No, they won't
read a bad book. No.
That's true.
They adults will kind of be like, well, all my friends liked it, or it got really good reviews, or
it's
it was on
dry
Oprah.
Right now, it'll get better.
It'll get
even
better. They'll give it a chance.
To read
but
it in school, they still
will not
read it. If
kids
it's not
will
a good
not
book.
Read, and so it's kind of a good gauge. And also, they're really fun to read because they have to be really engaging.
Yeah.
You know, they're a little more physical. Like the Percy Jackson books, I'm like, for my money, I like Fablehaven better. There's a little more something, maybe the pacing, but if you want a nice, like you were saying, a little lighter read, a little more optimism, not always necessarily fluffy, but just like, okay, I can kind of see where it's going, but I want to see how they get there, and I want to have this out-of-body experience. They're good reads because they have to be. Because a kid will go, eh, it's boring, I'm going to go play Xbox or whatever.
You lost me in 3 pages, I'm done.
Yeah, or one
page. Well, that's why I had such a hard time reading The Hobbit as a kid. My parents were like, you need to read this. And I'm like...
I didn't read it till I was in college. And exactly, then it was so before the movies were coming out. I'm like, okay, I'm a fantasy writer. I have to read The Hobbit.
You should attract a reader.
Try it. Read them. Read them because they're interesting.
I like them just because I enjoy the relaxation of reading it. Just so you can turn the page and you know that, you know, most chances of the characters that you read aren't going to be axed off some horrible way. Or
is it just more predictable for us as adults?
But sometimes it's nice.
I want fiction that I can read that's not dealing where they're going to get tortured, they're not going to get raped, they're not gonna
you don't have to deal with a heavy theme or too heavy
too of a heavy theme.
It's not, they're not going to stick those things in as a compensation because their story is weak. Reliant specifically on the story. And as you said, the story has to be good to keep
it has to be entertaining, and you can't, I can't remember if we were recording when I said this, but you can't stick a lesson in there, because kids will, it can be, you know, if you want the lesson to be friendship is magic, or whatever it is, then you have to do it through a really well-told story, using humor, mystery, wonder.
And said subject.
Yeah.
The lesson.
Yeah. So, you know, and have the characters figure it out on their own. But the reason that, you know, stories like My Little Pony and like that have gained such traction is because the message is simple, the stories are entertaining, really, you know, shiny. kids love them, and it's a nice refresher of, oh yeah, you know, that is important. And that's another reason I like to write young adult, is to kind of get, without being preachy and just telling a good story, but kind of be like, okay, you know, keeping your promises is a good thing, or telling the truth to who you consider your best friend, or being true to yourself, you know, trying to do the right thing. Those are important, but you want to tell a really good story around those ideas, and it has to be very real for the character. You know, and that's why Harry Potter, again, was successful. Love is the most powerful force in the world. That's a really simple message built into this intricate world of magic and mystery and horror.
And I mean, it's something that's in most fiction throughout the ages, and it's always bears worth repeating.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be one of the first books that kid reads, because you see a lot of the similar stuff woven into different stories, and to us it's like, oh well, I've seen that before, but they might not have, you know, Fablehaven or Harry Potter, or Wings of Fire, or whatever the new things are that are coming out, might be the first time they see that, and they'll go, oh my god, this is amazing. That's so true. Wow, I was so surprised, you know, and they're like, whereas my books, there's some pretty things that happen that any seasoned fantasy author could probably spot a mile away, but it might, I'm hoping that the way the story is constructed, it will still have emotional impact, and especially for a young reader, would have some impact that they'd go, oh, that's really cool. Or, wow.
That revelation.
And then I should tell all my friends.
Yeah, exactly. Read this book, you know, and it's,
I'm Shard. Rah, who's Shard? Let me tell you.
Let me show you. Yeah.
Suddenly the fandom gets a bunch more griffins.
Let me show you my world.
Exactly. Why should I read it? Read it and I'll tell you.
Read it because otherwise I'm going to hit you with it. Okay.
And it's a hardback.
I know, I used that as a kid one time. I wanted my friend to read Bunnicula, and they're like, why should I read
Bunnicula?
It? And I said, if you don't read it, I'll hit you with it.
Teaching your kids to feed your dog s'mores and kill them.
Did you ever read Hotel Howl?
Yes.
Yeah, that one. What was it? Where they go to the boarding, the kennel. Howl.
I remember the cover. I don't remember the title.
Anyway, I must have read that book 3 times. I loved it. And that's kids... Kids like adults, but less so because we, you know, we have less time and we want to read more books and we want to do stuff. Kids will reread a book and reread a book.
Well, it's like they'll watch a movie until it's broken.
Exactly. And they want to go back into that world. So if you can create an experience, even if your book isn't dark, you know, it's like Ponyo, like you were saying. It's an experience and they want to go there and be there. You know, they want to go to Hogwarts or forks or whatever.
Be the dragon hatcher or
exactly.
Feed their dog s'mores.
Yeah.
Just for the horror.
No, it was
Holiday
just
Inn, that's what it was.
Yes, no, it was just one of those things where it was like the first part of the first Manicule book and he's like, I love it when my owner feeds me s'mores, and I'm like, why are you feeding your, like, even as a kid, I'm like, why are you feeding your dog chocolate? That's stupid. You'll kill him.
I don't know. My sister's dogs ate an entire tray of espresso chocolate chip cookies, and they were fine.
They probably had the runs like nobody's business, but.
The greyhound ate it, so he's like,
tweaking. Well, that was like one of our friends had, he was very congested, and he was getting pills out, and he popped one, and it went on the floor, and his pug just. Up, and then the pug just, the breathing just went normal, like silent. And he's like, are oh. you okay? And the dog's just like.
He's like, I'm in another world.
And it's just like, that was Sir Goffin Sadie.
The dog went to his pills?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And the dog was just like breathing normally. And he's just like, wow, I didn't know this would work.
Wow.
Well, this is good dogs, shit. Right? If it's on the floor, it's just like.
Yeah. Fair game. My sister's dog ate a whole pizza once and he got it. He took it off the counter, and he's laying on his side, and I can't do a high-pitched enough whine, but he's got this distended belly like a barrel, and he's just like, and looking at him like, I just don't feel right, guys. I don't.
We had a friend of mine had a dog. He was a little beagle, and we were having a pizza party, and he leapt onto a chair, got on the table, devoured an entire large pizza, and then threw it all up just to prevent everyone else from having some.
See,
and one day that will make it into my YA book.
There you go. Middle grade.
The dog
Humor.
Who threw up pizza.
It's mine, bitches.
Funicula, well, I did a book report on it, and I made, like, freaking 5-inch puppets to play it out with.
Cute. I loved dioramas as a
but
kid
see,
on books.
But here's something in all of our explaining. We all remember Funicula. We all remember all the YA books that we've talked about.
And now look where we are.
And exactly. And
I don't even know what Bunnicula is. So.
Really?
So.
Adorable. Oh. So sad. He's a vampire rabbit.
Well, I figured that out. But
he sucks, like he'll bite a tomato and it turns white.
Did anybody watch Wallace and Gromit?
Yes.
No.
That's
not
a
see, this is...
I didn't like it.
Yeah, but there was the one with the rabbit with the kid. No.
That was a
no.
movie and
yeah.
not a book.
But what
so
were you
it was
say,
still
so,
part of my
oh,
childhood.
Just we
well, just the fact that we remember it. So, like, if you have that one book, for example, if someone who picks up yours and, like, you know, 20 years in the future is
someday,
just like,
it's like
yeah.
remember when I read that book about that griffin? What
there
was
we...
the name of that?
There we go. Someday your book will be someone else's Clarabelle.
It might be the first epic fantasy they read, you know,
yeah.
but it has griffins, and that's, you know, first, best, or different. And so I'm like, it's different, right?
Yeah.
It's not the first. It's not the best. It's not bad. But it's different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be the first griffin. It's not the first griffin book, but it's the first of its kind.
Yeah.
Because there's no humans and whatnot. They don't get to play in my sandbox.
Do they eat lots of horses?
What's that?
Do they eat lots of horses in your book?
No. There's no... You actually don't get... There are... in the third book, there's an encounter with the island horses. But nobody... No, I'm not going to tell you much.
Nobody gets
eaten. Okay, that's okay. Anyway, are we done?
Do you have any more questions to ask?
I think we're good.
I'm sure I would have better things, but I'm too intoxicated.
Oh, no. But I don't know. I guess I would just encourage people if you have a story inside you, if you don't feel like it's, if there's a market for it, write it anyway, because that's what self-publishing is for. Because if you want to write it, I guarantee you there's somebody who wants to read it. Whether it's YA or absurdist or horror or romance, just, you know, find your sandbox and build your castle. But,
play in it.
Yeah, do it.
Cool.
Follow your heart.
Well, so, thanks for letting us come down.
Yeah,
where can we find your material?
Yeah, tell us.
You can download my books from Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. You can order the first limited edition hardbacks from jessowen.com. If you want a signed one, send me an email through my website or find me on Twitter. I'm pretty much everywhere, so just... search Jess Owen, and if it's not the famous runner, then it's me, and go ahead.
God hoping you can tell the difference, right?
Look for Char.
Yes, look for Char. Slight resemblance, but not quite. But no, seriously, thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure and a laugh, and lots and lots of fun.
And filled with chocolate.
It's been a lot of fun.
Lots of chocolate.
Thank you for having us in your house.
Thank you. Indeed. Yes.
The Canadian invasion.
We didn't burn anything down.
Not yet.
Not this time.
We don't usually burn things down.
Yeah, well, you know, every time
we're Canadians peaceful and apologetic people.
Until you put wine in us.
So, if you would like to email us, you can email us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com. Send us comments, complaints, all that fun stuff that people email about, topics you'd like to hear,
books
guests
you'd like reviewed,
books, wines you'd like me to drink while you're recording.
Ocean is now taking requests for vintage.
Ways I can kidnap Shard. I mean, nothing of the sort. Also, we're on Twitter and Facebook and Weasel and So Furry and
FA,
all at Fangs and Fonts. Thank you again, Jess. It's been a pleasure.
Indeed.
Thank you, guys. The pleasure is mine.
Yeah. Anything else?
I think we're good.
You're so
That's
funny
all,
when you're drunk.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good night. Good night.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
And congratulations on us for 1 year.
1 year.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 1 year.
You're Summer King. Summer King?
The Griffins.
Yeah.
That's more, it'll even out.
Yeah, sure. Hear me more. Hear me more. Slurry words.
Mark,
you're already.
I'm the one who has to edit this, not you guys.
You already did a spelling error.
No, I do spelling errors all the time.
'Cause she was in her golden years, and I think it was a weird way of presenting it to kids, because she's like, I write books, and you're like, that's awesome, and she's like, here's my manuscript that I
that's the 10 o'clock siren. It's time for anyone under the age of 16 to go home.
Oh my god, you have an air ride siren for a curfew?
Yep.
Air raid.
Are we like in some cool like dystopian future? Because if we just went tech, I'm excited.
That is the bane of theater companies across.
Because at 10 o'clock,
if you don't finish your show by 10, it's like. Mm. Although we did do Godspell once and it was awesome, because right after Judas betrayed Jesus, the siren goes off and we're like.
See now I'm just expecting if I look outside,
there's like that a mess there, of children.
No, there's gonna be a huge fog rolling in. APC tanks starting to move in, barking dogs. You see guards like, sing that story, intergalactic dogs.
So do you have like people that are actually like patrolling the streets?
Well, like you said earlier today, don't make a rule you can't enforce.
But
so.
Saturday night in Whitefish, it's, you know, it's still a little Montana town. There's a lot of bars downtown and lots of drinking. That's why we drink at home.
Easier.
But,
no, when we drove in.
But if there, I mean, if there's just a kid wandering around, there are police that patrol the neighborhoods, and not necessarily for kids, but for drunk drivers and, you know, miscreants and stuff. And if there's a kid out, the curfew is enforced. Yeah.
Yeah. My first experience when we were driving into town was I looked over and there was two guys standing over one girl who had clearly drunk too much, was laying on the ground with her legs like this in a skirt, facing the road, and I was like,
I have to look again.
What the hell was that?